This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour, and we've got another guest tonight. But before we go, I want to give out our toll-free number. The toll-free number to call in is 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. And that number is toll-free all over the world. Anyone or anywhere can call in. But we usually don't get a lot of call-ins. I guess on my show, people get so involved in just listening. But if you're out there and you want to talk to our guest tonight, you're welcome to call in. Okay. I know you're listening because I get emails from all over the world. I was really amazed that people are tuning into this everywhere. All right, our special guest tonight is Carol Pate. Now, she's been on the show before, and if anyone wants to download the other show that we did, it's in the archives, and the archives are free to download. That's one thing good about this BBS radio. They don't charge for downloading any of the shows in the archives. Now, Carol Pate has her association, which is called the Carol Pate Psychic Center in Little Rock. But we are old, old friends. We go back to many, many years.
Oh, yeah.
And when she was on the show before, she was telling me about some very interesting things in her life. And then we began to take a whole new direction, and we ran out of time. So I knew I was going to have her back on so we could explore the other direction. Okay, but first, Carol, let's refresh the little bit about yourself, the ones that haven't heard the other show.
Okay. Basically, I've been on Psychic Detective on Court TV. I've done 6 shows to date, getting ready to do apparently 2 more.
There'll be 8 altogether, won't it?
So far,
uh-huh. That's the Psychic Detective show, isn't it?
Yes, that's on Court TV.
Uh-huh.
And the most recent one shown was July the 5th. And prior to that, I've done a number of other television shows as well. Larry King Live, also Psychic Witness, which I believe is on the Learning Channel and sometimes Discovery Channel.
Unsolved Mysteries.
Unsolved Mysteries, yeah. A lot of television shows.
Uh-huh.
And I work with murder cases worldwide, readings worldwide. I've now become internationally known. And it's been very, very rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've known you so long, but you said you have always had psychic abilities even from childhood, haven't you?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I worked my first murder case with the police when I was 12 years old. And it was a missing classmate. And they came to me, and I was able to touch into his photograph, which they handed me. And I told them that he had been accidentally shot by another boy while on a hunting trip.
Uh-huh.
And where his body was located, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, back then, was this surprising to you, this ability, or was it shocking in any way? At such a young age.
In all honesty, Dolores, I really didn't know how to react. It just happened. It didn't really scare me. I just didn't know I could do it, and I don't know that I reacted one way or the other. I was, I think, a little shocked.
Kind of like it was just natural for you to do it?
Yes, yes. It was very natural. And I'd been doing that sort of thing, not with the police, but from the time I started talking.
I bet you shocked your parents sometimes.
I shocked my parents a lot. But it seemed to be, it was like, you know, you're born with a third arm.
Yeah.
Well, it seemed natural to have 3 arms.
Uh-huh. So you were just able to do this, and so it has never seemed uncommon for you.
Or unnatural. No.
But you know, a lot of people, and I work with a lot of cases, that their parents try to stuff this out with their little, you know, they try to stifle these abilities.
Oh, mine did too.
They say, well, you can't do that. People will think you're crazy or you're weird or working with the devil. We hear that a lot.
Well, I got called a witch a lot.
A witch, okay.
And I couldn't believe that because I was Baptist. But, no, I got a lot of harassment growing up in school.
Uh-huh.
The other children, my peers, they were either afraid of me or they attacked me.
Oh.
And it was very, very difficult because I would know things, and I did not know not to blurt information out.
You hadn't learned yet to keep it inside.
No, I didn't know. I couldn't tell the difference between psychic information and regular information, whatever that is. And I still have a hard time.
So you, anyway, the kids were afraid of you back then.
Yes, they were. And that's when they started labeling me a witch. And in all truthfulness, Dolores, I didn't even know what a witch was.
I know even today, you know, both of us were people still keep thinking we work with the devil and everything. And that's as far away from the truth as you can get.
Well, I was so spiritual. Even as a small child, I always believed in God. I always believed in Christ. I was just always naturally spiritual. And everything talked to me, plants, trees, animals, spirits. I was always just really, really connected. So I never got that dark side.
Uh-huh.
And so I didn't understand what that was even about. How could you use something that kind of came so naturally in any kind of an evil manner? I couldn't do harm to anyone. It was like doing harm to myself.
Yes, that's what we understand. We know anything you send out, you're going to get back tenfold. So the last thing you want to send out is negativity.
On top of that, I would feel it instantly anyway.
Uh-huh.
Because I was so empathetic to people and everything around me.
Mm.
So if I hurt them, I hurt me.
That's the way I feel about it. We're here to help people. We're not going to hurt anyone. But there's always those people who don't understand. And like we say, no amount of evidence will ever convince them anyway.
No, you've got your skeptics out there that are not really skeptics. They're just hard-headed, narrowed individuals that if you can't see it, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, and so we're not here to try to convince anyone anyway.
I'm not.
Me neither. That's what I've always told, you know, with my work, that we just do it, and whenever people are ready, they'll start asking questions, and then we're there to help them.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm not here to prove anything anyway. It's always been there. It's always been active. I've just simply gotten to a place where I can sort of work with it and use it to help others without it running me 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a better control over it, if you will.
Yeah.
So I'd be doing it no matter what.
You couldn't get out of it no matter what. Anyway.
No, never could. Never could. Tried.
Okay, well, I remember the last time we talked, you were saying that you worked at, 300 or 400 murder cases that you've been involved with?
Oh, yes. Yes.
You do about one or two a day?
Yes. Matter of fact, I did one today. I did one yesterday. It was just a daily thing.
Hmm.
Although I will say, Dolores, it is very, very wearing.
I was going to say, wouldn't that be hard on you?
It
is. Because didn't you tell me that you go through the same emotions?
Oh, I feel what the victim feels.
Uh-huh.
I see what the victim sees. And on top of that, if I touch into the energy of the murderer, I become one with the murderer.
And that's not a very good place to be.
I'd almost rather be the victim.
Hmm. Did you pick up on his motives?
His, hers, yes, absolutely. What they're thinking, why they're doing it, and how they feel about it.
Mm.
And
well, this is the reason the police have involved you so much. And on the court TV, they've been going into some of your better-known cases. Is that what it is?
These are the solved cases.
The solved ones.
That's the ones that have the perpetrators been put in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been absolutely proven out.
But some of the other ones that you work on every day, you're just supplying information.
Yes.
And you don't know for sure if they'll be caught or not. Is that what you mean?
Well, a lot of these cases I never get feedback on. I give them the information, and I never hear back whether the information worked, whether they arrested the individual. I never hear back.
Mm.
And that's frustrating.
It's kind of frustrating.
Yeah, it really is. And it works. It's even the same way with families.
But, you know, it might be that they're afraid if they do say where it came from, it makes them look bad. But maybe they just chalk it up to, well, we did some good police work, and we found these things out for ourselves.
I think they're also afraid for the public to find out.
Yeah, to keep from admitting they're working with a psychic.
Well,
you know? But, you know, nowadays, the way we have it on TV and there's so much out there about it, I don't think they'd be as afraid to do that as they used to be.
No, they're more open about it.
They wouldn't be afraid of the, you know, what people were going to think.
Well, I've had police departments that I've worked with get flack from the public for working with me, saying that they were wasting taxpayers' money,
yeah,
that sort of thing. But
well, you're breaking up a little bit.
I think there's a stigma that's attached.
What?
There's a stigma that has been attached to the word psychic.
Okay, I was thinking you're breaking up. It's hard for me to hear you. Like, it's static in there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Let's say that over again, what you just said.
I think there's a stigma to the word psychic, and the police are a little reluctant because of the way the public reacts to the name psychic or to the word.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's just hope that the little gremlins are not playing with our telephones. We don't need that tonight anyway.
I don't hear any static on my end.
Are you hearing static?
No,
It's like it's breaking up on this end. But we'll just try to keep going and see what happens anyway.
Okay,
but do you want to tell us about you said you just filmed for the sixth one?
Yes.
For the court TV.
I had to go to Denton, Texas, where I worked a murder case that was totally unresolved. It was a missing person. Actually, it was a kidnapping.
Yeah.
And they did not know what happened to the young woman that had been kidnapped. And so the police called me in, and they flew me down there. And I worked with them for approximately a week. And the first thing that they did was they handed me, I don't know how many photographs, 16, 17 photographs of individuals.
Yeah.
And I told them who the individuals, who they were, and their relationship with each other, and those that were not included at all, that they had slipped in.
Yeah, just the bogus ones, you know,
yeah.
Just do it.
And then I
would do that.
Out,
yeah.
The murderer and his girlfriend.
Mm.
So then they took me to a parking lot where this girl apparently had disappeared, but they didn't tell me that it was the parking lot that she had disappeared from.
Yeah.
And when we got on the parking lot, I walked around a little bit, and then I got back in the car, and as we began to drive off the parking lot, I got shot in the left shoulder, and I screamed. Because it was real.
You mean you felt that?
Oh, yeah. And I kind of dropped down into the seat, which scared the detective halfway to death. And then I told him, all right, you need to turn right. Because the girl seemed to come into me and began telling him which way to drive.
Uh-huh.
And took him straight to the location where she had been placed on the ground and left to die.
They just took her out there and left her there then?
In hopes that she would bleed out.
Yeah.
And she had bled a lot in the truck. And then I saw where he had come back. He'd gotten his truck stuck in the mud And he went to find out if she was dead, and she was still alive.
Uh-huh.
So he crushed her throat with his foot.
Oh, my gosh. Uh-huh.
And then he began to drag her away from there. And she had on a jacket, kind of a gold-colored leather jacket. And it was like slowing down his progress of trying to pull her. So
yeah.
He took her jacket off and threw it up in the tree and then loaded her up in his truck. But there was a witness.
Oh, somebody saw him doing that?
Yeah, I saw the witness, and he worked for the state. And he was like a ranger.
Yeah.
And he didn't know, though, that the girl was in the back of the truck.
Well, he didn't see them put her in it, though.
No, he didn't. But he helped them to get unstuck because they were in the mud.
Yeah.
And then they drove off, and then we went to a secondary place, which was a quarry, where I saw him. Then he wrapped her up in a sheet and left her there for a while. And then I took him to the quarry, and they found the sheet. They also found her jacket up in the tree.
Oh.
And he moved her about 5 times.
Huh. I guess he wasn't worried about being caught if he was doing that.
He was terrified of being caught.
You were picking that up then.
He had it in his head that if they couldn't find her body, they couldn't prosecute him.
Oh.
He really believed that. So on the 5th time, he moved her across the state line from Texas into Oklahoma.
But could you pick up on the motives of why he did this in the first
place?
Yes.
He thought that she stole $400 from him. And she was totally innocent. Now, I don't know where he got that in his head. But
yeah.
He believed that she had stolen $400.
Hmm. But is a human life worth that much? That's not even that much money, really, when you look at it.
Of course not.
You know,
but of course
they're not thinking straight when something like that happens.
Well, he was heavy into drugs. He was extremely cruel and mean. People were absolutely terrified of him because he would do anything, anytime. His girlfriend was scared to death of him. She was in the car with him when it happened.
Oh, and she didn't do anything then?
No, she was terrified.
Hmm.
But since I told them about the witness, they were able to locate the witness. And they were able to prosecute him because there was enough blood and DNA in his truck that, along with the witness, he's in prison for the rest of his life now.
Hmm. He was not brought to justice then?
Oh, yes. He's in prison.
He is in prison then?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They were able to get him for aggravated assault and kidnapping, which carries a life sentence.
Okay. Did they ever find the body?
No.
Okay. But at least with the witness, they knew something was going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because he claimed he was never there. And the cadaver dogs that were brought in hit on every location that I took them to. I would go there first.
Yeah.
And they'd bring in the cadaver dog second.
Yeah.
And they would hit on the exact spot that I told them her body had been laid.
So the dogs could sense this then?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I work a lot with cadaver dogs. They're wonderful.
So, anyway, when is that show going to air?
It just got through airing July the 5th.
Okay, so that was the last one that was aired.
That's the last one. But they'll redo it. They'll reshow it.
And you said you're going to go out there and to the locations and film 2 more?
Yes. Yes.
But, of course, you have so many, I guess they could keep you going as a regular, couldn't they?
Well, that's pretty much what's happened. I usually do 2 segments, or 2 shows per segment.
Yeah.
I've got some really good cases. A lot of my cases are really, really old, but I'm getting a lot of new cases now I've worked about 2 years ago that are beginning to, they're getting finalization on.
Mm-hmm.
Like guilty on these individuals. And once they go to trial and they're they're judged guilty, then they can do a show on it.
Uh-huh. It has to be verified that way.
It has to be verified. And every detail has to be verified.
Yeah, because they're going out on a limb otherwise.
Well, the good thing on all of my cases is we try to tape record everything from start to finish.
Yeah.
And then they transcribe and take notes on everything.
Uh-huh.
Because otherwise you lose all that detail and that information.
Yeah, I saw one of your shows, and I was wondering how you could remember all of those little details step by step.
Well, actually, I didn't. They reminded me because they had taped all the details.
Yeah.
So they knew it better than I did because I worked so many cases.
Oh, yeah. It's like with me. I can't remember one client even a few days after they leave.
Exactly.
They're just, but we can't keep all that information in our heads. They're
well,
just too much.
You would lose your mind with it.
Oh, yeah. So I work with people, too, you know, as a therapist. And then after they leave, you know, you got to go back to your normal life. And I think it'd be harder with you because you're feeling all these emotions. You've got to be able to shut it off.
Well, that's what home is all about.
Yeah, you have to. You always got to have a home life somewhere.
Yeah, home and television.
That's what I say when I come back here to my whole house in the hills. I said it's where I recharge my battery.
Yeah, you have to.
You can't be around all of that all the time. It's just impossible.
It's very, very hard.
Well, you said the average person contact you if there's a murder case they want you to work on?
Sure.
It's not just police, is it?
No,
other people can contact you?
It's been families that have contacted me as well as police. But I'm going to tell you, Dolores, I'm changing my policy.
I am
so burned out with the murder cases, and I never thought I'd ever do this, but I absolutely have to. All the time, for years, I always worked for free with the police.
Yeah.
Always. And I've had so much negative flack and just problems dealing, not with all the police, but a fair amount. And I give out all that information, and then I never get any feedback. No one ever says anything to me, and I just get so burned out. I'm now charging.
Yeah, well, I can see why. But that's the thing. People, they don't realize any kind of a healer or anybody working in the metaphysical field, you do get burned out after a while. Especially if you do so many cases, one after the other.
Oh, yeah.
So you're changing it now.
I am changing it. And the reason I'm changing it is I'm kind of hoping that it'll, like, tone down a little bit.
Well, they always say if you charge, then the curiosity seekers, maybe it'll weed them out.
Exactly. And, you know, I get a lot of cases where I'm just kind of curious. My Uncle Joe died mysteriously 50 years ago. Do you think you could tell me what happened?
Yeah, uh-huh.
You know, when it's a waste.
I get the same way, people coming in. They just, oh, I don't have any problems. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
And I always tell them, if you're coming out of curiosity, you're going to get more than you bargained for.
You wouldn't believe how many people wanted me to just check into a local murder for them because they were curious.
Just curious, huh?
Yeah, I won't do it, though.
Not the people involved, the family, just the people, other people.
Other people.
Yeah. No, see, they don't realize how much energy that takes out of you to do all of that.
No, of course they don't, and I can't expect them to.
It's the same way. I get tons of mail, and I've got to where I just can't answer them anymore. I used to try to answer everything. Now they're just getting a big stack of it, and there's no way I can do that and do the other work. But you're probably doing the same thing, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's too demanding.
And people call. I know you have people, though, that filter some of your calls, don't you?
Yes, I do, and God bless them. They are a lifesaver for me. And these were like previous clients that have just come in to aid and assist me. Wonderful people.
Well, see, it's the way here, too. Two of my girls work for me, and they have to screen the calls. Because, otherwise you'd be on the phone all the time. People don't realize that. They think they're the only ones.
Well, Dolores, in your work, you use so much focus. You are really focused in.
Yeah.
And that requires a lot of mental fatigue at the end of the day, because that focus is a hard thing to maintain.
But then when it's over, I try to, you know, you just push it into the background and you go on with the rest of your life.
Yeah,
but you're focused, too, when you're working on these cases.
Well, actually, I'm not really focused. I'm kind of out in Netherlands somewhere.
Yeah.
But I'm so spaced out reaching and getting that information that when I come back down, I crash.
Ah. That's not good. But
yeah.
At least you're not, it's not making you sick.
Not so far, and I'm going to try to curb it.
Knock on wood.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, when they do this too much and they begin to get burned out, then it starts affecting their health.
Yeah, I go through burnouts about twice a year where my brain turns into cotton candy or something.
Yeah.
I don't even have an opinion. I can't think.
Your brain starts to shut down.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I can't drive.
I can see why. Yeah, that's what they say. Your brain starts turning to mush, huh?
Oh, yeah. And I just say,
okay. But yet you don't stop, because you also, that's why I want to get into the part that we didn't get to finish last time. You also travel all over the world and work on all kinds of mysteries, too.
Oh, I do.
Do you find that like a relief or release after working on murder cases so much?
Oh, I love it.
It's a different way of going, isn't it?
Yeah. If I could do it as a full-time hobby, I would.
But it's not like it's not as intense as the other.
No, it's not that negative.
Yeah.
I travel back in history, and I can re-experience and see things as they were at the time that I go into.
Yeah.
And it's really...
You tune into history, you mean?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Uh-huh. But you're not doing this every day as intensely as you are with the murder thing.
No. Mm-mm.
That this is almost like a release, like a vacation, I guess, even though you are working.
It is. It is very pleasant. When I do it, I get very floaty, very light. And I get to see things as they were 2,000 or 3,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm in that time frame, and I understand a great deal about the archaeological sites that I'm visiting.
Yeah.
So a lot of information flows, and once in a while, I might get a shaman, an Incan shaman, or something of that nature. Will come through me. And
okay, you're breaking up again. I hope the phone's going to behave itself.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, I'm trying to make some adjustments here with the volume control. It's on a speakerphone, but yeah, it's cutting off your words, but I hope it's just on my end and not going out like that. But would you want to talk about, I know you had an amazing case in Japan, didn't you?
Yes.
Where you said you found the shogun's, you went there to find the shogun's treasure?
Yes.
Do you want to talk about that?
There was...
Boy, now I'm losing you.
Are you?
Yeah. What?
Uh-oh.
Can you get up closer to the phone?
I'm right on top of it.
You're right on top of it. Okay.
I got a landline.
That's our little gremlins are in there again. Do you want to talk about that one or not?
Yeah, that's fine.
But I'm thinking, if you don't, if anything I ask you, if you don't want to talk about, that's fine.
I'm an open book.
Okay. All right. But I know you told me you were called in to find this in Japan, weren't you?
Yes. Tokyo Broadcasting Systems chose a male psychic and a female psychic. They went nationwide search.
Yeah.
And I got chosen, and another male psychic by the name of Jim Watson was chosen.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't tell us what it was about.
Would they just go on your background when they were picking?
No, I got flown into New York where they tested me.
Oh, okay.
And apparently I passed all their tests.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we weren't told what the filming was about. And then they flew us to Japan, and they took, first thing they did was take us to a cemetery.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, find the man that was, that is buried in this cemetery that had something to do with the burying of a treasure.
Hmm.
Period. That was it.
Yeah, and you got a whole cemetery to pick from.
Yeah, I got the whole cemetery. So I'm going, how in the world am I going to do this?
Did they do you separately or together?
They did us together.
Okay.
So Jim and I are walking down, and all of a sudden I see a monk, and he's standing over a tombstone, one of the grave sites.
Yeah.
And he looks at me, and he looks at the grave site. So I called the film crew over, and I said, this is the man that was involved with the burying of the treasure. Now, mind you, I don't know what the treasure is.
Yeah.
They don't tell me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it turns out he is. He was.
It was the right place.
It was the right grave.
Yeah.
So they got all excited over that. So they took me to a different cemetery, and they said, now go do the same thing.
But did the man with you, did he find anything?
No.
He didn't get any impressions?
No.
Hmm, okay.
And I probably wouldn't have either, except for the monk that appeared and showed me the grave.
And you said sometimes you do have that happen, don't you, where an entity will appear?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then they took you to another cemetery?
Yes, and we did the same thing. And again, the monk appeared and showed me the tombstone, or the grave.
Yeah.
And it went from there. Anything that I did, it was like everything I touched turned to gold. I could do no wrong.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So finally, they took us, the night before, they were going to take us to the property where they suspected that maybe the buried treasure was. And I told them, I said, this treasure has a blood curse on it.
Oh.
And that this treasure is very dangerous. Well, the night before I went to the property, this symbol appeared on my arm, which represents Holy of Holies for the Japanese.
Yeah.
And it raised up. And the next day, we went to the property, and Jim Watson got attacked, psychically attacked.
Oh.
On the property.
Well, did they know there was some kind of a curse or before they called you in?
They most definitely did.
So they knew this beforehand?
Yes, they did.
Hmm. So he was psychically attacked?
Yes. And I was told the night before what to do when I got to the property. I was to go to a temple on the property itself that was dedicated to the white fox. And
yeah.
That I was to do prayers at the white fox.
Before you went out to the place where the treasure was supposed to be?
Correct.
Yeah.
So Jim was with me, and he was violently shaking. And he was in a great deal of pain. So I did what I needed to do at the temple. And then I did lifting of curses, spells, conjurations, etc. off of Jim.
Yeah.
And he cleared. And they took photographs as I did this.
Yeah.
And you could see this black energy starting at the bottom. And each picture, the black energy moves upwards until it completely clears off the top of the picture.
Oh. What did he think later about any of that?
Scared him to death.
Oh.
Absolutely scared him to death. And after that, I was supposed to take two little statuettes of the white foxes that were strewn around as offerings, which
yeah.
I still have. And then I started getting information about the treasure. And
did you think you weren't attacked because you went to the temple first?
That's right.
Did what they told you to do?
That's right.
So that way they would leave you alone then?
Yes.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, after that attack, they then told me that this was the Shogun treasure. It was $2.5 billion worth of gold.
Wow.
And that 40 psychics that have tried to come onto the same property and find the treasure either died or were crippled or have lost all of their gifts.
Hmm.
And I was like, well, thanks, guys. I appreciate the knowledge.
Yeah, tell me after the fact, you know.
Exactly.
That's why they wanted to do it, but they weren't going to tell you anything about the dangers with it.
That's right.
And that's not very good.
Well, I think they call it television.
Yeah, but they weren't caring much about the people involved.
No, it's called television.
But you said it was gold. Was it gold jewelry or coins or what?
No, these were huge gold coins. They were about 12 inches long.
So what did they do? Dig it up and show it to you then or what?
No, we had to find the location
of
where they buried it.
Okay, so it sounds like you did see it, but you had to find the location first.
Well, I found the location, but I got a severe warning. The warning was if you find the treasure itself, it would bring into effect a great disaster. And I told them the information that I got.
You mean a personal disaster or a national disaster?
No, a huge disaster. And I'll explain what that turned out to be.
Yeah.
So I told them where to dig. And as they dig, they started finding tunnels.
Oh.
And they found symbols of Shogun weaponry, knives, swords, all sorts of china from the Shogun time frame. So
yeah.
They knew they were in the right location. And basically, this is a real short version of it because it's...
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
You told me bits and pieces before, but I never heard all of it.
Oh, this is only a fragment.
Okay.
But when they finally hit the location of the treasure itself, there was a huge, and I wasn't there for that, because I just went there, just did the filming and left.
Yeah.
There was a gigantic, huge earthquake.
A huge what?
Earthquake.
Oh. You think that's what the warning was? There would be some kind of a natural disaster then.
Yeah. And it filled in everything.
Oh.
And that was
tunnels and everything.
That was the epicenter of the earthquake.
It makes you wonder, was that part, must have been part of the curse then.
I think it was.
That
the
was
men
a
that
powerful
were,
curse. If
well,
it
the men
do
that,
that
digging,
even call in the, the forces of nature.
Well, that's what the curse was based on.
Yeah.
It was Shinto magic.
So, in the beginning, they definitely didn't want anybody to find this. That's why they put such a powerful curse on it.
500 people committed suicide in this location trying to find the treasure.
Ah.
I take that back. 80 people committed suicide. 500 warriors allowed themselves to be killed in order to protect the treasure.
Uh-huh.
So they start finding their bodies.
As they were digging?
Yes.
So they definitely didn't want anyone to ever find this.
No. No, they didn't.
But you weren't there then when that part happened.
No, thank God.
Well, was this made into a documentary then?
It definitely was. There's like two parts of the documentary. It was a very powerful experience. And I have the copies of it.
Uh-huh.
There's only one problem. It's all done in Japanese.
Oh. That would have been good if it could have been translated, but I guess it was mostly dealing with Japan anyway.
It was. It was.
But this way, you didn't actually see the treasure then, did you?
No, and I didn't want to.
You didn't want to go any further with it.
Well, the men that went in to dig out those tunnels, they all lost their minds. They got what's known as gold fever.
What's that?
They start pulling their hair out and ranting and raving and digging with their bare hands. I've never seen anything like it. They had to call in a Shinto priest, which was Mr. June, and he had to depossess them.
Whatever was happening then?
It was from the curse.
Hmm. So do you know if they ever did find the treasure?
You know, I don't know.
Because, I mean, the earthquake had filled all the tunnels in.
It filled everything in.
So I guess it was definitely not going to let them go any further.
I don't think so. I warned them. I said, you can dig in the tunnels, but when you hit that treasure, it's going to become extremely dangerous. And it was when they started to hit into that treasure that the earthquake happened.
Into the room where it was then?
Yes, chamber. Uh-huh.
Hmm. You know, we always think that maybe curses aren't real.
Yeah.
They always talk about the ones in Egypt and everything, but that sure sounds like that was a powerful one.
It was real. I never believed in curses in my entire experience in my life. Believe me, after this one, I believed in it.
Well, you know, they had a lot of powers back then that we don't understand.
Well, the Shinto call into effect all of nature, and they don't really bind them. They seduce them into helping them.
The spirits of nature, you mean?
Yeah, and they turn them into gods. That's the seduction.
Yeah.
And so they pervert these natural forces into helping and assisting them. I know that sounds really strange, but...
Well, you know, with my work, I believe anything's possible now. Because
yeah.
My books, The Convoluted Universe, are going into stranger and stranger ideas. So I think it is possible, but it is also dangerous for the person doing it because to try to control nature, you know, that it can come back on them.
It goes against God.
Yeah, that's what it says in one of my books. You're going against the laws of nature. You can't do that.
Not without consequences.
Hmm. But still, it placed a powerful enough thing around it, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Definitely.
Because I know I found in, you know, my work, you know, I showed you with the Nostradamus material, and it was in your work in Egypt with the tunnels under the Sphinx.
Yeah.
And in the books, the Nostradamus books, it talked about a huge force field that had been put around those areas to protect them.
That was true.
So I think it's the same idea, isn't it?
Yes.
More like a force field was put over the treasure, the same way it's been put over these things in Egypt.
Well, I'll tell you what, it sure messed with the cameras. There was strong electromagnetic energy there.
In Japan or in Egypt?
In both.
Both places.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned is that psychic abilities phenomena is based in electromagnetic energy.
Yeah, everything is energy anyway.
You bet.
But I know when my work, a lot of times strange things will happen with the tape recorders and anything electronic that's being used in the room. But and I have heard about even in Eureka Springs, you know, when they went up there, when that used to be empty, and they were taking a film for it, you know, for a documentary about the haunted rooms up there, and they had trouble with their cameras and their sound equipment.
Oh, yeah, always. Uh-huh. And you always find orbs if you take photographs.
Yeah.
You'll always find orbs in those haunted areas. Those orbs are not human beings, though.
So. What do you think they are?
I think that they are natural to this earth plane. I think that they are nature.
Yeah.
And I think they live off of negative energy.
Mm-hmm. Because energy is energy anyway.
You bet.
Because I get so many pictures sent to me on the email and through the regular mail of people who have taken pictures of these orbs and all kinds of streaks of light and things like that. And, you know, we get so much of it, so I know it's real. But to me, it's no longer an unusual phenomena. people that send the pictures think that they're the only ones that have this kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's really quite common.
It is.
Especially with our technology now being so high.
Yeah, I keep thinking that's what it is, that with the cameras now, we're able to catch things where before we couldn't.
Exactly. Higher speed.
Yeah, and the way they film is so sensitive. That
Absolutely. They've
been there, but before it was only under very controlled circumstances. Now, I think you could pick it up and you wouldn't know what it was. But that's what I think, anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
I believe it's always been there, but just now we're being able to become aware of it. Maybe it's vibrating at too high of a rate that we don't see it with our eyes, you know.
Exactly. Animals can see it.
Oh, yeah. I've got that in some of the thing I'm going to put in the new book, that animals can look into other dimensions.
Absolutely.
And they can see these things. I used to have a cat. We lived in a haunted house. Didn't have any choice. My husband was in Vietnam. I had to stay there. Our cat was always watching things moving around, going up and down the steps, and it gave me the creeps.
Uh-huh.
I know they can see these things.
Well, their eyes are a different frequency. They can see at night.
Yeah.
And so their eyesight is much different than ours.
So they're seeing things that we aren't aware of that way.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And
well, we've got some time left. Let's talk about last time we started in on the Sphinx, and we probably won't have time to finish it all, but we just got into the interesting part that you were, what was it? You had gone down into the tunnels. You were lower down there, weren't you?
No,
you want to start at
down there.
The beginning of that, or what? Did they ask you to come over there and do that, or did you just go, or what?
It was the Shore Project.
Yeah.
Dr. Joseph Shore, and it was also with ARE.
Okay.
They were involved, and they wanted to open the chambers under the Sphinx.
Yeah.
And I was also working with Boris Said, who was a producer.
Yeah.
And he was filming all of this. And
I was thinking of Hadi Zawas, but was he there?
He was there, yeah.
Huh.
And so I went there to be as an acting psychic on the spot to see what I could pick up and locate.
Yeah.
And I told them that there was a, I told Boris that there was a well right next to, what do you call it, leading from the Sphinx to the Great Pyramids.
I mean, above ground, there's not anything. Could you
yeah,
mean like a tunnel or something?
No, it's a causeway.
A causeway, okay.
Yeah.
I haven't been to Egypt yet. That's one place I haven't gone yet. So there's a causeway connecting the two?
Yeah, it connects the Great Pyramids and the Sphinx.
Yeah.
And this well was to the very side of this causeway. And I told them that the well led down to the entrance into the tunnel.
Yeah.
Well, the tunnel had been under 300 feet of water for probably thousands of years. So they thought it was nothing more than a well.
Yeah.
Well, it dried up all of a sudden.
And then they could be able to go down into it?
They were able to go down into it.
Is that when you went down?
That's when I went down.
Uh-huh.
And I told them, I said, there are connecting tunnels from each one of the pyramids to the tail of the Sphinx, where there is an antechamber.
In the back?
At the very tail of the Sphinx, which
it,
is...
That's what I've been told, that it's in the back there somewhere.
It's about 12 feet down,
uh-huh.
And it's in the limestone.
Okay.
And that there were 8 other chambers, and they're stair-stepped in the limestone underneath
yeah.
the Sphinx. And Dr. Tom DeBecky brought sounding equipment, and he was able to locate the chambers and that there were things in the chamber. because they, of the sounding.
Then you know there was something there.
Yeah. So we went down this well. The first chamber was five sarcophagus that were emptied.
Yeah.
The next chamber down, and we're like 300 feet down.
You said you were lowered down, weren't you, like in a sling or something?
No, that was Dr. Short. I got to climb down this iron, very small rung ladder.
Rather you than me, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, and it was muddy.
Yeah.
So, no, I got to climb down the ladder and up the ladder as well.
Yeah.
I'm a real working psychic. So at the bottom, there was what appeared to be a temple.
Uh-huh.
And it had four pillars to it with a square in the middle. And to the side was a black granite sarcophagus lid, but it had no lip to it. And I told them, I said, underneath that sarcophagus lid is the opening to the tunnel that leads to the sphinx.
Uh-huh.
Well, they refused to open it while we were there. Later, it did get opened. And that did lead into a tunnel, but there was a problem. The tunnel was filled with water.
Okay.
Now, scattered on the floor of this underground temple were human bones. And, I mean, there was a multitude of them.
Sounds very similar to the one in Japan, you know, really, with all the bones and the bodies and things.
Yeah, they kind of fall into a category, don't they?
Yeah, it seems like it, you know. Okay, then what did you do?
I held one of the human bones.
Yeah?
To find out what happened. And what I got was a battle that took place between the priests that were sealing those tunnels that led to the sink, so that no one could get into those chambers. And they died in that chamber. They were butchered.
They were trying to protect what was in there?
They were trying to protect what they had placed in the chambers underneath the sphinx.
Uh-huh, okay. That goes along with some of the information I've got, too. But did you ever get back into the back part?
No.
Well, I've heard that Hadi Zawas in particular doesn't want people exploring around down there, does he?
Well, they had dug another tunnel that actually led to, I think, one of the chambers.
Yeah.
But it was it had a piece of black granite that was about 3 feet thick.
Yeah.
And they couldn't cut through it.
Like a doorway or what?
Like a wall.
A what? A wall?
A wall.
A wall.
Yeah. And then you've got to say, okay, here this whole plateau is nothing but solid limestone. How could they have gotten walls of black granite to be the chambers?
Yeah.
Underneath the sphinx.
Well, the information I have is that they were put in before the sphinx was built.
Really?
Yeah, is that what, have you got anything about that?
No, I didn't know one way or the other, but I find that interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, that actually makes sense to me.
So they said in one of my regressions, the cat, you know, the sphinx, is like a cat sitting on a mouse.
Yeah.
Sitting on his treasure.
Makes sense.
The cat sits on top of the treasure, the hidden records.
Well, that was the impression I had.
Well, I think it would make more sense. It'd be easier, wouldn't it, to build the chambers first and the walls and then to construct the other one over it.
I don't know. It's just mind-boggling to me.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring up something else that no one's really said anything about.
Okay, now we're watching the clock now, so don't be upset if I interrupt you, but go ahead. We'll talk as long as we can.
In Cheops, the Great Pyramid,
yeah,
there are stairs that lead to the king's chamber.
Yeah.
They're made out of stone.
Yeah. Huh.
They're worn away.
They're worn away.
Yeah, they're practically worn away.
Is that from the tourists, do you think?
No.
Because I know they get a lot of tourists going up and down them, don't
they? They have a wooden ramp that covers that.
Oh, okay. I think I've seen a picture of that. That way they don't walk on the steps?
That's correct.
Well, what do you think? Do you think it was worn away back in those olden times, or what?
I believe that the Great Pyramid was used for initiation.
Yeah. That makes sense. Because, you know, in a lot of the regressions, that's what they do. They are left in there, and they put in like they were supposed to be buried alive. There was a lot of initiations they had to go through.
Yes.
To be priests and priestesses.
That's what I got.
So it's very possible.
Absolutely.
Do you ever get anything? I just got a few more minutes here. He's going to pull the plug if I go too long.
Okay.
Do you ever get anything about which was built first, the pyramids or the Sphinx?
The Sphinx.
That's what I've got. They said the Sphinx was there before the pyramids.
Absolutely.
And there was a temple there that was destroyed.
Yes.
And that is about in the same vicinity where the Sphinx was built. I mean, the pyramids were built.
Actually, the temple, there was a few, but one major one was in front, directly in front of the Sphinx.
Okay, that goes along with my information in the Convoluted 2, I believe. I have a whole thing about that in there. So it's amazing how we both work in different ways, and yet we're coming up with the same information.
Well, I have a belief. Truth is truth.
Yeah. That's when people say, well, your work is so much like somebody else's. Well, to me, that adds validity.
That's right.
We're not copying each other. We're finding the same information through many different ways.
Confirmation.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to have to stop again.
Okay.
Every time we get on here, we got so much to talk about.
Well, it's been
all right.
A joy.
You give out your information on how people can contact you.
It's area 501-888-8056, and it's from Monday through Friday.
Okay, repeat the number again.
Area code 501-888-8056.
Okay, and you also have a website.
Yes, I do. CarolPatePsychicCenter.com.
Okay, but you're kind of not wanting to do as many murder cases as you have been.
I'd like to slow down a little bit on that one.
Okay, and tell them, no curiosity seekers, please.
Please.
Okay. All right, and if you want to find information on mine, it's Ozark Mountain. It's OZARKMT.com, the abbreviation for mountain. And my 800 number is 1-800-935-0045. 1-800-935-0045. And I want to thank you again, Carol, for being on. It's always a delight, and with so much information every time you come on.
Well, thank you for asking me. I always enjoy it.
Okay, now you want me to go to Peru with you again, and so I don't know. We may be doing things. Who knows?
Hey, why not?
You're braver than I am. All right, but thank you very much.
Okay, you have a great evening. And I wish the listeners a great evening, too.
Okay, and I hope they got a lot of good information.
Me, too.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.